Hello and welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Nick Harris, and today we're joined by...
Ta-da! Vittorio Bertocci.
Well, it's great to have you back on the show, Vittorio.
Thank you for inviting me back. It's always a pleasure to come by to Building 20.
It's awesome. It's been quite a while since you've been on the show.
Yeah, I think the last time was August.
Yeah, so quite a while.
Right?
Yeah, episode 86, I believe you said it was that you were last on.
Yes, it was... At the time, it was when we announced the first the developer preview for Windows Azure Active Directory.
So, okay.
Yeah, almost 1 year ago.
So a lot's changed since then, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's jump into the news, and then we'll get into what's changed. And then what do you have for our viewers? What will they be seeing after the news?
After the news, I guess that we can chat a bit about where we are today. Let's just make the status from 1 year ago. And then, since our wheel never stops, I'm going to chat about what is in preview now. What we discussed last year is now generally available, so developers can use it in their production apps. And then we already have a next wave with cutting-edge technology, and I'm going to give you a glimpse of that.
Okay. Looks cool. That sounds cool. I've already seen the demos, so it's worth sticking around and watching. Let's get through the news quick. And
all
then
right.
Jump into the main segment. So I believe Hashi mentioned this last week when he was doing the news, but I thought it's worth doing again in case you missed last week's show. Pretty big announcement. We've actually announced that we've got data centers coming to China, Japan, and Australia. So some great announcements there for the APAC region.
For Australia, I can see that it's close to your heart.
Yeah.
Pride of...
Very proud to see it. A lot of people down there have been really waiting on that. So it's going to be great to be able to start utilizing DCs in Australia.
Very
haven't announced what dates they're available yet, but keep your eye on it. That'll come eventually. Okay, so what's the next one? The next one we've got here is announcing the release of AMQP support in Windows Azure Service Bus. So AMQP is the Advanced Message Queuing Protocol. We've been working on it here for Microsoft, it says within this post, for a number of years with some very big partners. So basically it means that you're going to be able to send messages using a well-defined protocol across many different platforms, OS platforms that is, and obviously there'll be no data loss, etc. there. This post specifically goes into a step-by-step demo of how you can go and utilize this. So how do you build a pub/sub solution using AMQP? There's some diagrams here from an architecture perspective of how it all hangs together. How do you create a service bus topic and three subscriptions within the portal? Moving right along, we go down and there'll be client-side pieces, so writing a .NET sender app. But many people have solutions that span not just Microsoft stacks, right?
Yep.
So if we go down, you'll see that there's going to be clients. So this is a Java client. How do you write a Java app listener? So if we come down further, how do we write a Python app listener? So you can see that as well. And if we continue going down, we'll see the last one, how do we write a PHP app listener? Now, those client SDKs are all maintained by community, I do believe. Quite a good thing to see.
Very nice. I guess that Clemens is like at the seventh heaven. He must be super happy.
Yes, partying in his man cave in Germany.
In Germany, of course.
Probably cracked a few local beers, I'm guessing, with this announcement.
Yes, knowing him, by all means.
Right. So it looks like Nate has arrived here somewhere. I should sign out of these things.
Which reminds me, let me turn off the notifications, because Nate is fine, but we don't want to definitely show on air.
You never know what's going to come in.
I forgot this time.
Amazing. Okay, so let's get through this last one before I get an inappropriate message from someone.
All right.
last thing, automating SharePoint deployments in Windows Azure using PowerShell. So already today within the portal, when you create a new VM, you can say from gallery and choose SharePoint. But most deployments are sometimes more complicated than a single VM. You may want a SharePoint farm, for instance. And in this blog post here, you'll find links out to a samples GitHub repository. And within this, we have a number of different samples of how you can automate deployments of SharePoint solutions using PowerShell. So here there's an example of a single VM template. There's an architecture diagram of what it looks like. Probably more interesting to sort of the power users, building a highly available template. So you can see there that you've got sort of two in the web tier, two in the SQL tier. So again, quite useful templates. It's going to save you a lot of time of remoting in, configuring, and that kind of thing. So certainly worth looking out. I'm always all for, you know, press a button and bam, it's done.
Oh, yeah. And that was actually Michael. Yeah. Oh, wow. Michael is an alumni of our team as well, right?
Yes, yeah. So Michael was originally he was in DPE. Mm-hmm. I think before that he was at Microsoft for some 10 years or something prior to that as well.
Yeah, I believe so. And he was always interested in PowerShell. So clearly he is also very happy as well. Michael?
Hello, Michael. So I believe we should pass on a congratulations to Michael as well. He's just started a new role. He's joined Aditi.
Aditi?
Yes.
He left Microsoft?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he did actually join a product team at Microsoft here, but now he's moved on.
All right.
So we'll miss you.
Yep.
Keep blogging because you write some good blogs.
Yes.
So let's cut over now and start talking about what's changed since episode 86.
And now for our feature presentation.
First, I've grown a beard.
Mm.
Oh, no, wait.
It's finally manicured.
Maybe already a bit of white. Huh? But more importantly, all the preview features which we discussed at the time, which were easy single sign-on through WS Federation and SAML protocol going through this centralized projected directory in the cloud, is now generally available. That's to say that if you want to write a line of business application or a software as a service application which you sell to other organizations, now you can do so using Windows Azure Active Directory in production. And as we already announced, to great joy to our community, you can do so for free. That's to say that Windows Azure Active Directory is a feature that comes with your Windows Azure subscription and comes at no further cost.
Mm-hmm. So that is very cool.
That's nice.
And, is there any asterisks anywhere?
Not really. Like the only thing is that we have a very high number of objects that you can create in the context of a directory. Right. And I believe it's like in the order of hundreds of thousands.
Okay.
And if you want to go beyond that number, you have to call us.
Okay.
But apart from that, it's like completely free.
Awesome.
And one nice thing that we have in there is that especially for the software as a service aspect, we really took a page from the, how to say, in off world, which started as like a consumer play. And instead now, in your organization, you can really take advantage of this very smooth flow for signing up new customers. So that when somebody that owns a Windows Azure Active Directory tenant, like, for example, you might have bought Office 365, or you might be a Windows Azure subscriber as well, and you wanted to sign up for an application which is using Windows Azure AD, then there is a very easy mechanism for which you just follow a link, you sign in the Windows Azure portal, you get presented with a dialog which says, would you like to sign up for this application? Would you like to give to this application access to your directory? And as soon as you just hit grant, your application gets provisioned automatically. Yep. And that's fantastic, mostly because in the past, you had to go through like a negotiation process with the administrator of a directory of your prospective customer.
Yeah.
Instead now, they just go and kind of like saying, yes, I agree to this little game to write on my wall or send me tweets and stuff like that. Instead now, as an administrator, you can say, yes, I want to allow my users to take advantage of this app. And all it takes is that little... that's really a feature that... our customers really appreciate.
Yeah, streamlined experience for sign-up is certainly very important.
It's nice. And it's something that would not have been possible without a projection of your on-prem directories in the cloud. And we always had the ability of setting up single sign-on using metadata, using tooling.
Yeah.
But the main difference here is that it is a second level of standardization. That's to say that every instance of your local ADFS might be different, but the fact that they are all projected through this multi-tenant service, the Windows Azure Active Directory, allows you to streamline all of those aspects, because you don't need to worry about all those differences. You just deal with these centralized endpoints. And that's really, really powerful.
Yep.
And it's also pretty easy to set up. Basically, about 2 months before we G8, mm-hmm. we locked some characters in dark rooms, including
okay.
myself.
Okay.
And we started, doing nothing but writing very deep, very detailed workflows,
okay.
in which we explain in details mm-hmm. what you need to do if you want to take advantage of these features. And if you just land on the documentation page of a Windows Azure portal, yeah. you'll see that we have this list of workflows yep. in which, in the first two, we describe what you can do mm-hmm. with our GA offering. So you can okay. do single sign-on for your own Linux business apps. You can do single sign-on with multi-tenant apps mm-hmm. like the one I just described. And this is also another very important part. You can query the directory even if your application runs in the cloud.
Right.
There is this new API which we discussed, I believe, in details back yep. in episode 86, mm-hmm. in which you can just use OData and auth for gaining access to the directory so that you can do things like people picker or yep. understand the relationships across okay. all the various entities in their directory. You can easily do so. And again, here we go in the details, yep. showing how it works.
Yeah, I actually did read through the first one of those a couple weeks ago.
Great. The first one, I actually wrote. So
do not quiz me.
I wrote the first one and the third one.
Okay.
And even if it doesn't look like that, because our writers reviewed that, mm-hmm. and so they fixed my broken English.
Okay. And so it doesn't all sound like your funny quirks that Barry put in.
No, I actually didn't add them. To begin with, I didn't okay. want to put them in this weird position.
Okay.
Instead, the second one was written by Edward Vu, who's the okay. PM that looks after the graph. Instead, the fourth one is already a workflow which describes our new preview wave.
Mm-hmm.
Like we GA'd the single sign-on, we GA'd the multi-tenant support, we GA'd the graph API mm-hmm. access, and now we already have in preview instead the next generation
yeah.
of features.
Very cool.
And the fourth one was actually written about Caleb Baker, who is yeah. another PM in the team. And it shows how to write a Windows Store application and use Windows Azure Active Directory for authenticating
yep.
to then call a web API using auth.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the core of a preview feature is that we have these new endpoints on Windows Azure Active Directory, which supports the auth code grant flow,
yep.
which is what you would use from, for example, public or private clients, in which you actually obtain a token for your app, and then your app can access in a yep. Web service. And as a part of this preview, we also have new flavors of Azure Authentication Library, which we also discussed back at the time. Yep. And now you can actually use that library also for Windows Store applications.
Oh, very
so
nice.
We have a number of features that are Windows 8 specific, like, for example, the use of a web authentication broker or the use of a static cache, mm-hmm. which allow you to automatically refresh tokens and manage token lifetime without having to worry about that aspect, which again, we got good feedback that it works well.
Okay.
But we also demonstrated that if you don't want to use a library, or if you want to target a platform for which we don't yet have a library, for
yep.
example, you want to write a Windows 8 app,
yep.
this is just off. So it's pretty straightforward to write something with its
Windows phone app, you mean? Because you already support Windows.
We support
store
a Windows
apps.
Store yeah. with a library,
yeah.
but for Windows Phone 8, for
yeah.
example, we don't
right.
have a library
okay.
because the library that we yep. wrote for Windows 8 takes advantage yep. of features that
yep.
are not available on Windows Phone.
Yes.
So you can't just take exactly the same library and
yeah.
run it in there.
Yeah.
But I have a blog post which shows that if you wanted to cobble together something mm-hmm. which authenticates with Windows Azure AD going through a Windows 8 app, Windows Phone 8 app is very easy to just yep. write it from scratch.
Okay, and given it's a REST API, you could basically use it from any client.
That is exactly right.
So if you're iOS, Android, or whatnot, you can still
yep.
use Windows Azure AD.
That is exactly correct.
Okay,
perfect.
Very cool.
In fact, I'm wondering, perhaps I should, I don't know, show something?
Yeah,
you want
I
to
think
see something?
That'd be good.
All right.
Demos are always mandatory on this show.
Excellent. So, actually, first, let's take a look at the Windows Azure portal. Like, as you can see here, back at the time when we had the first preview, we had our own little preview portal mm-hmm. where you could use it for creating directories and managing them. And it was separate just for the preview.
Yeah.
And then now we are fully integrated with the Windows Azure portal.
Yeah.
And what you can see here, in fact, is my test tenant, my mm-hmm. test subscription, in which you would normally land on the generic page.
Yeah.
But then there is a this part, okay. which represents my tenant, my organization.
Yes.
And in fact, the history of this specific one is that 1 year ago, I signed up mm-hmm. for Office 365.
Right.
And then as all those features became available, I subscribed to Windows Azure
yep.
using an organizational account, like one
okay.
user from this directory. And so now if I land in there, and let's actually do it, what happens is that Windows Azure knows that I want to sign in this specific tenant.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of getting the live ID, I get
yep.
this page where I have my Windows Azure settings, and then I can sign in as an organizational account.
Yep.
And if I would have federated with a local ADFS, here I'd be redirected to my own
right.
ADFS. But I'm lazy, so I didn't
okay.
do it.
Right.
Especially for me setting up AD, not being an IT pro. And so here I sign in the portal, and when we GA'd, we added a specific section to the portal, which is a bit lower here.
I think you've got your,
here it is. Active Directory. Let me zoom on it. And in this tab, you have both the ACS namespaces and
mm-hmm.
the directory, which we created for the occasion. And you can use this part of the UI for doing pretty much everything that you would normally do on Active Directory.
Yep.
So here I have my list of users. I have my list of applications which I registered.
Right.
And
quite a few apps.
Yep.
Being busy.
Just play with this stuff a lot. And then here I could register custom domains so that
yep.
if I wanted to use my own vanity domain, I can
yep.
do it. I can set up my single sign-on. So that's very, very straightforward.
Yep.
That's very nice. And if instead you wanted to, take a look behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
we have another utility, which is what we call the Graph Explorer, which we already had at the time, which you can use for playing with a graph. So now I signed in using the same user,
mm-hmm.
and now I can just come in here. And for example, if I want to take a look at my list of applications,
yeah.
as you can see here, I have the query that I would normally do with a graph. And you can just type the resource
yeah.
address, and I get in there. And the reason for which I'm bringing you here is that in our new preview, we have this ability of creating clients which call web services.
Okay.
And we want to give to customers the fine-grained control that you would want for an enterprise-grade application.
Yeah.
So what happens is that in order for a solution to work end-to-end, you need to come to the directory and tell the directory the identity of your client application,
right.
which in our case will be a Windows Store app,
mm-hmm.
the identity of the resource that you want to call,
right.
which would be a web API in our case.
Mm-hmm.
And in both cases, you use what we call service principles. Those
right.
are entries in the directory which describe them. But we actually go beyond that. And we help you to define permissions which tie specific clients to specific services. So
right.
you can come in this UI, which is, temporary.
Yep.
Like we will eventually have these features in the portal,
yep.
but this is just a preview for the
mm-hmm.
time being, in which you can define a client, you can define a service, and you can basically say this client can call this service
right.
using this scope.
Okay.
The scope is an auth concept, which largely defines what are the things that you can do when you call that
yep.
specific resource. And so here we have this easy UI, in which you can come and define a client application. You can pick an existing application. Let's say, for example, I have this .NET client. And let's say that I want to be able to call from this .NET client any of the services that you see here. You can see I have a lot of test apps.
Yeah.
for example, here there is a to-do service. And then here I can define what we call the scope, let's say what I can do. And we have like this built-in user impersonation, but in practice you can pretty much define whatever makes sense for your application.
Okay.
And then if you are what we call a private client, again, it is off terminology, let's say a client which lives on the server, like the code behind of a website and similar, then you can also define a secret which you can use in the off flow. Whereas if instead you are doing an application on a device in which you cannot guarantee that you will protect this thing, then you just say public client and then the flow will allow us. So basically, after all this blubbering, let me just show you some of these in action. So here I have a...
So that one key question. So that site, which you were just at, the temporary site, which shows you where you can configure this and also allows you to hit the Graph API. Obviously, for anyone out there, they don't have to use that because you can do all this via the REST API if you wanted to.
Sure, you can.
It's a lot of extra work, I assume, but...
Well, you can do it. Here, the main thing is that there is a bootstrap aspect to all this. That to say that you can do programmatically all the things that I have shown on that page. However, your client in itself must be registered. Let's say that in order to do these calls, you need to be registered.
Okay.
So, or you do this by, for example, creating a web app using the usual flow, and then at that point your app would use the client credentials.
Okay.
Or you come to that portal, you provision your first application, and you give to that application the permission to call the graph as a service, and then at that point you can use that thing and like hit it.
Okay. Cool.
It's nice. It's fun. So here I have a solution, which is partly the solution that you can get when you go through our workflow.
Right.
And basically here what we have is a client, is a to-do client, which is just a Windows 8 app. Mm-hmm. It is written in C#, but in fact our library is in Windows Runtime Component, and that means that you can take advantage of that from any of the languages that are offered by the Windows Store. So you can also do it in JS.
I don't see a C++
app. Yes. No. I've been using C++ for a good 10 years before joining Microsoft.
Okay.
But now it's since 2001 that I don't use it.
Okay.
So yeah, I didn't write it. Sorry, my bad.
But key point is, given it's a Windows Runtime Component, if you were writing a Windows Store app in C++, you can consume this from there as well.
You can totally do it. The twist here is that we distribute these, how do you say in English? Distribute or distribute?
Distribute.
Distribute. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
My accent. Both sounded the same.
I moved it somehow back and forth. After 8 years almost here, I'm still clueless. We use nuggets for distributing applications, see? I'm still messing it up. And in the version of Nuget that we used at the time, there was no way of distributing that for native apps. Let's say that if you'd go on native app and you'd download this thing, it would simply not make it available to your app.
Right.
And so you can download the Nuget by hand, you can pull out the component and then use it, but you can't just use the Nuget right away. So that's why we didn't really advertise it much for this version.
Okay.
I believe that I read somewhere that the Nuget are going to support native apps as well. At that point, there will be no problem.
Okay.
And then we have our service, which is just a web API, standard MVC4 web API with a bit of code in front of it. That code didn't really change. It's still using the JWT token handler.
Okay.
JWT or JWT is this token format, which works really well for REST services.
Yeah.
And then this app is the app that I was discussing earlier. I just wrote it to show that you can hit the endpoints directly without the library. And this app instead is a bit of, how to say, a preview.
Okay.
We already have a Yale.NET version out there. But that version that is currently public does not support these new flows.
Okay.
And this guy is instead a little test which I wrote using the next version of the library, which does support all these flows.
Okay.
And what I'm going to show you is running this client for calling this service.
Okay.
It's pretty straightforward. So let's just run it, and then we'll discuss how it works. If I hit play now, what a fantastic background.
Yep.
So let me just make sure that I don't have anything in the background in cached. And let's just say here, this is a classic application, yep, in which we create to-dos.
Yep. To-dos.
To-do one.
If any of the viewers have more exciting ideas for demo apps, please add comments to the bottom of the show.
Yes, as long as it's not the calculator or the ticker. Like, there was a time in which, like, probably Nasdaq was like top.
Okay.
So every app was like, oh yeah, the stock ticker. And
okay.
So yeah. To-do somehow. So what happened here is that when I hit the add to-do,
right,
my system knew that I was going to try to access a resource which, okay, needs a token. And so it used the library. We'll see in a moment that it takes just a couple of lines of code,
okay,
for a triggering authentication with my authority. And the library wraps the web authentication broker, which is this component of a Windows runtime,
yep,
which is specifically designed to offer a canvas where, mm-hmm, web apps can paint their authentication UI.
Yep.
And it's a very flexible mechanism, as we'll see in a moment.
Okay.
And so now, basically, I just have to remember my credentials and tag them. And who knows if I remember the correct ones. Once I hit sign in, this thing does a bit of a token dance.
Yep.
Like, what we were seeing here was the authorization endpoint of Windows Azure AD.
Right.
And when we signed in, we got back a code. And then the library automatically grabbed the code, sent it to the token endpoint,
yep,
obtained back a token and a refresh token,
mm-hmm,
and saved that in the persistent storage. So now if I close the app and I come back, this thing will remain in memory.
Okay.
And so now I can add as many as I want.
When you say persistent storage, is that like local storage, password vault?
It's a local storage. For the time, okay, being, we are using the password vault.
Mm.
We are considering putting the info elsewhere. Let's,
okay,
say that the password vault has some interesting features, but,
mm-hmm,
not all of them might be apt for enterprise level
right,
design. So in the preview, we are using the password vault, but we'll... Mm. We might change it before we hit RTM.
Okay, but from a consumer perspective, it's no major difference.
It's no major difference.
Calling the same API,
that's
and
exactly
that's all
right
under the hood.
Like, it's all completely, yeah, transparent. If for some reason, mm, you wanted to use a different cache, you can do so by deriving from a specific interface which we provide.
Yeah.
And then when you initialize the initial object, you can specify your,
okay,
own cache instance. And then we'll just call it at key points. Let's say that when we acquire the token, we'll just call your cache,
yep,
using your interface.
Very nice.
In fact, this is a good segue for taking a very, very quick look at the code.
Okay.
Specifically here, this is how you use the library. The idea is that you want to know the tenant that you are working with.
Mm-hmm.
We are working on a mechanism in which we'll do dynamic discovery, in which you don't need to know in advance the domain name. You can hit the resource, and the resource will come back and tell you.
Okay.
But for many line of business apps, you will probably already know. Like, we have many apps in Microsoft that we use for,
yep,
I don't know, reporting absence and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
For all those, you'd already know that it's Microsoft domain, so you'll use that. And the,
yep,
same for your own company.
Okay.
Then you have this client ID, which is the ID which represents the application in the directory. So
right,
that, when you do the request, the directory will know,
mm-hmm,
who's the client requesting it. Oops. Here, I clicked on something. Then you wanted to know, of course, the web API that you wanted to do a token for.
Hit.
I think that's useful. And then the rest is pretty straightforward. Like here, we have an HTTP client. Here we create a new object, which we call the authentication context,
right,
which is somehow you can think of it as the proxy of the directory.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you create this object, and then you use this object for you taking advantage of the features of that,
right,
specific tenant.
And that comes down with the NuGet?
And it comes down with the NuGet, yes.
Yeah.
So this is part of this namespace.
Okay.
Which for the time being is still a preview, let's say, but once we hit RTM, we'll get rid of the preview part.
Okay.
And then once you do the call, here you just have this call, which we call acquire a token, async, of course, because,
yeah,
everything is async in Windows,
yeah,
8. And here we have our quality where in which we specify the resource and we specify who we are. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, we could be using more than one client ID. And in this result, we get pretty much everything that, that it gets returned, like, for example, the access token. But if we would want to, for example, use the refresh token, all these kind of things, we could do that as well. And here, very simply, we just extract the access token, and we add it as a header to our call. And then we just go ahead and we make the call to the API. So there is no need for you to understand OAuth here or any other protocol, because like now we are using OAuth, but there might be other flows in which, for example, you specify credentials and similar.
Right.
We don't have it yet, but eventually we might have it, in which behind the scenes we will decide what's the best flow for doing the task that you are trying to achieve. So that you don't really need to become an expert in all this. However, if you are an expert, we are using consistent terminology so that you know what's going on behind the scenes.
Okay, and basically it boils down to just knowing how to configure it and the one line of code to call login.
That is exactly right.
Yeah.
And on the service side, it's the same code that we used in the past, so I'm not going to bore you with the details. I'll just give you a quick glimpse of a counterpart in JavaScript, in which here we do pretty much the same stuff. The only difference is that, of course, we use the promise pattern in JavaScript, in which we call acquire token async, and this is exactly the same object model. It's just projected in JavaScript, which is pretty handy.
Mm-hmm.
And just for fun, in my free time, I wrote a little app here that is for giving you a better idea of what happens behind the scenes. For example, here you have more or less a representation of what happens in here. And in the scenario, you have the client with it, all the coordinates that you see in here.
Okay.
And if you wanted to just do a test client, you don't need to actually write one. You can use this.
Right.
You can go in the in the Graph Explorer, register the new client, and then come back here and cut and paste all the code in here. And then you have the authority that you want to talk with. You have the resource that you want to call. And thanks to this great feature of Windows 8, you can just modify stuff in here and see how the request that is done by Yale is going to work.
Yeah.
And now, if you click on this token request, we go again through the experience of authentication. Slowly. As you can see here, you can specify a hint so that if you already know the user, you can specify
it,
which is great because my typing is terrible.
Yeah.
And this thing.
There we go.
Goes on the way, and here there is what you get back.
Right.
And this is the famous JWT.
Right.
And it's really not rocket science. Like, I can just show you what it is. This is just a three segment header in which you have a little part at the beginning which describes all the algorithm that were used for signing, the key that it was used. Here, there's the token in itself, and here, there's the signature, which you use for. Of course, you don't need to know any of that because the library takes care of it, but it's always nice to know that there's really no magic. If you want to do it, to process stuff yourself, like I do in the phone client, you can do it.
Okay.
And this stuff is just, I'd say, Base64.
Okay.
So there is this nice website that I often use. Only for a non-sensitive info.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to paste a real one in, I guess.
No. But for test purposes, I can just grab this guy.
Very cool.
And as you can see here, yes. Never mind.
Oh, that's the web page.
That is JavaScript that likes to.
The web page is attached to
the I did that in the context of an. But here, as you can see, this is a super, super simple token format. It's just JSON. mm-hmm. which you have all the things that you classically expect from this, like the issuer, which represents trade research, my tenant, yep. and the audience, which is specifically scoped to the web service I'm calling.
Right.
So that if a man in the middle steals these things and tries to send it somewhere else, then right. the somewhere else will know that the audience is different. And then other information like name and surname, which are not exceptionally good in this case. But so very, very straightforward. And if we go back to our, actually, let me come back to this page and close it before it complains again.
Yeah.
And if I go back to this guy, now I can just make my call.
Yep.
So and as you can see here, there is all the list of to-dos that I created. And just before we wrap on this, I want to show you a feature which I absolutely love of all these. So now I just cleaned all the settings.
All right.
And now I want to sign in as somebody else. I want to sign in as Terry, which is another user in my test directory.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see here, since I deleted all my cache, now I'm being prompted again. And now Terry has an interesting characteristic. Terry is an administrator in my subscription.
Right.
And I marked him, her. I never know if it's a male. Is it a male name? Is it a female name?
I don't know.
Name?
I've got an uncle named Terry, but I think it's also, him. I think can also be a, I think it's so, unisex name.
Let's dedicate this to your uncle. Let's say that it's a male. So he is an administrator. And for extra security, we just checked his account to require multiple authentication factor.
Right.
So now if I sign in and start using his password.
Okay.
If I remember it correctly. Now you'll see something different. See, instead of giving me access, now this is, how to say, going through another flow, which is a flow where I will be required, if T-Mobile has a signal in this study, to actually to enter a code through my phone, which is now an authentication factor. So now I just got an SMS with code that I have to send. And if I would not have access to this phone, or if I would not be able to unlock my phone, and now I just replied with a code, then I would not be able to have access. Because Terry is a specially high in level.
There
and see, now I got the token. Yeah. And this is super powerful because the code that I've shown you does not change at all.
Yeah.
It is exactly the same code that I wrote.
Okay.
But now that this feature became available, I can just take advantage of that. And it's all thanks to the fact that instead of bolting in my application the code for doing all this, I delegate this to a browser. It's all thanks to the approach that we're using for. So
that's very, very powerful, I think. Useful for many scenarios, including a lot of enterprise line of business scenarios.
Right. Like this is like the multiple authentication factor is something that it is actually required in a number of workflows.
Yeah.
And the ability of just adding it like this, both to websites or to rich client app, is pretty powerful.
Yeah, especially given it's a tick box.
It's just a tick box, in fact.
Let's have a look at it if you
have
it handy.
I should have it handy. So here we were in our set of users. Here was Terry. And here was classic user settings.
Mm-hmm.
And then there here we have this require multi-factor authentication.
All right.
Which is
very nice.
Pretty nice. It was just a matter of going there, doing the little check. Yeah. So there was a sign up. So that I've proven that I have access to this specific number. And it was very nice.
Cool.
All right. So the next steps for us are, of course, taking this and moving it to GA.
Yep.
And I've shown you the library for Windows 8. But we have in the work library for other platforms as well, which are very important to us.
Just to be clear, though, when you say moving this to GA, you're not referring to Windows Azure AD. Because that's already GA'd, right? You're referring to...
Thank you for the clarification. Correct. Yeah. Like Windows Azure Active Directory is already GA for web single sign-on, multi and, multi-tenant applications, and Graph API access through client credentials.
Right.
The thing that is currently in preview is the auth code grant flow, which is the one that is used by these specific kind of apps.
Okay.
And The other thing that is still in preview is the .NET library.
Okay.
And the Windows 8 libraries for obtaining the tokens.
Okay.
And the Jota handler for verifying calls through your web APIs.
Okay.
And we are working to move those mm-hmm. to general availability and also to address other platforms. In fact, speaking of other platforms, we just released a preview of our Node.js libraries on the service side. So now if you want to do single sign-on and graph access through a Node.js app, there is a sample on GitHub.
And very cool.
You can definitely put the link in there.
Yep. Yep. We can put it down the bottom of the show.
Yep.
Okay.
Great. So I think that I bored you long enough. So
I don't know. I really like your client application. The visualization there is perfect from a perspective of teaching someone that doesn't know, you know, a lot about the auth flow, how it works, and what goes on.
Thank you for the feedback. So now that you said that,
cool.
I'll definitely use it at TechEd next week.
Will it be available for people to download and use after your TechEd session?
It largely depends on how much my wife wants to go around on hikes during the weekend or if I can work on that. But I am committed to putting it out as soon as I'll be able to do it. Since I'm literally doing it in my free time, I'll do my best to put it out.
Okay, so you're going to TechEd. What's your talk or talks for our viewers that may be going? We definitely want you to come and watch a tutorial.
So I can talk about one talk, which is one about doing web single sign-on both for line of business apps and for multi-tenant applications.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is largely making a live version of adding single sign-on to your web application and doing the promoting that application to be multi-tenant. So that's pretty much going to be the same info in there, but with an Italian accent and a bit more, I would say, visual explanation as opposed to just reading these 80 pages of workflow.
Sounds pretty good.
Well, I'll do my best.
Okay. And of course, I'll be there. I've got a couple sessions.
Nice. What are you going to talk about?
I've got a mobile services overview. So that's a beginner session for anyone that's new to using Windows Azure Mobile Services, and then we've got a sort of a bit of a deeper dive if you're building real-world applications, where we cover geospatial push notifications and some of the auth scenarios. That's
very nice. I hope we don't overlap because I'm totally going to come over and see you perform.
Okay. I don't think there'll be overlap there this time around, but it is something I'd like to do at some point in time. So perhaps we'll talk about that, maybe another show.
Maybe another show.
So, if people want to get a hold of you, Vittorio, what's your Twitter alias?
My Twitter alias is Vibronet.
You got Bob's doing magic editing these days.
Ta-da, Vibronet.
Okay.
Which I'm obviously not sure how to pronounce it, but and then I recently moved my blog from MSDN. Long ago, since I was prescient. Bought a domain, cloudidentity.com.net.info.
Okay. Can we pull it up just so people can
see
it?
Oh, sure. I will feel a bit, self-serving, but... And after a long... of course, sorry, I was forgetting. One thing that I will take advantage of this platform to mention that we are looking for two senior developers for our team. And we are specifically looking for people with experience with Android and iOS. So if you have experience in those two platforms and you'd like to have an incredible impact because you're going to work on a very, very, very cutting-edge service, which is like central in the industry, like I would say, I'm biased, but I'd say that this is like the top identity as a service offering in the industry right now. And since we are kind of like new in this area of iOS, Android, and similar, you will have an opportunity to have an incredible impact already from day zero. So please apply, and looking forward to work with you guys. Sorry for taking a room for...
Details are in the blog, are they, of how to apply?
Yes, here is the post with the link to the job descriptions, and you can use that to apply and... if you have questions, always feel free to contact me. I think I added, I have a little tab here. If you have questions, contact me and I'll be happy to cover anything. But anyway, like a few months ago, I decided that I wanted to be able to say bad words in my blog.
Okay.
And almost the end, I kind of like felt guilty.
Yeah.
And so I took wholesale all my 10 years of blogging and I moved it, copied it on the other side, created a redirect. So if now you land and there, you're redirected. And now I have my little website.
Yeah, very cool. Nice work.
Thank you.
Sure, it was a lot of work to move 10 years of content across.
Actually, it was interesting because I could have easily done it. I could have done it through the web blog APIs. They are pretty straightforward. However, I was somewhat lazy. Mm-hmm. And so I just went on Odesk.
Okay.
And I hired somebody on the desk to do it for me.
Very cool.
And I didn't give them any details, coordinates. I just asked them, please get all these posts and move them to the new settings.
Okay.
But they had to screen scrape it. They didn't have any special access.
Okay.
They did a fantastic job.
Oh.
I'm very satisfied.
Excellent. Yeah, so I'll keep that one in mind.
Yeah. It was actually Nate that I remember.
That's where he is.
Exactly.
He's been away for weeks. He's probably still going. He's like up to year three of your posts.
No, I mean, he was Nate that he suggested that you use Odesk.
Oh.
It was a very good suggestion.
Okay. I thought Nate was the guy doing the actual
work. No, I can't afford Nate.
Okay.
Nate is
he's
far
cheap.
Too
He's cheap.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
All right. So, thanks for watching the show. Of course, like us on Facebook. There's a link down below. Follow us on @CloudCoverShow, and let's get yours in once again for the people that just watched the last minute of the show. Your Vibro.
Vibro.net. Vibro.net. Without the dot.
Okay. And I'm Cloud Nick. So thank you so much for coming on, Vittorio.
Thank you
for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.